DW Africa Link.
We now live in a world where artificial intelligence, or AI, dominates a discussion, investment, and in some ways is really revolutionizing technology so that our lives become easier. But it also poses a risk to your privacy, because AI has opened up whole dimensions for privacy breaches. So how can governments regulate social media and AI whilst at the same time protecting its citizens? Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
The Kenyan government has recently ramped up efforts to regulate social media and artificial intelligence, citing concerns over AI-generated images mocking President William Ruto and other leaders. Now, social media has long been a vital tool for Kenyans to organize protests and amplify dissent. As Kenya tightens its grip, citizens, on the other hand, are voicing outrage over what they see as a move to suppress political expression. But how should the government go about regulating AI technology instead? For this particular discussion, I'm joined by Mark Kaigwa, who is a Kenyan tech entrepreneur, once named one of Forbes Africa's 30 Under 30. He founded the digital marketing company Nendo, and he has dedicated his career to understand Africa's digital transformation, publishing trend-setting insights like the annual African Social Media Trend Reports. And then we have our very own DW's Andrew Wasike, also a seasoned journalist who you already know from all his reporting on Kenya. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. I want to start with you, Mark. In your view, as someone who's in the industry, is the government's push to regulate social media and AI an attempt to protect citizens?
Thanks, Josie. Happy to be here. I think that one of the fascinating things with these pronouncements is what they come on the back of. So I think that it is presented as protecting citizens, but really citizens have in their own way been exercising what some would call greater than their freedom of expression, and many might describe as well within their rights. And this has been part of just the contention, is that these expressions, whether through AI-generated images and what we at Nendo have tracked pretty comprehensively on our website with the digital research and insights we did last year around the finance bill, we've seen even AI-generated songs and videos. And so there is an aspect here of where citizens are turning to online forms of protest, and that might also be underlying one of the reasons why these proclamations are coming from the government.
Right, right. And speaking of AI produced songs, I mean, just I know there are a lot of our listeners who want to have this answer. There was a song and a video that came up a few weeks ago, on that R. Kelly just produced a song in prison. You are in this industry. I don't know if you've seen it. I just want to know, is it true or is it just an AI AI produced song? Because if it is, then oh wow.
Yeah, so this is the world we're living in now, Josie. So that has been debunked by a couple different sources. I'm seeing the AFP fact check and a couple others. But that just shows how uncannily realistic and essentially believable that many of the things generated by AI platforms can come across. So it's music, it's images, it's video, and even I think in Kenya we've seen an AI generated what we call a deep fake video of President Trump talking about the former deputy president in Kenya regarding Gachagua. And so again, even that looks believable, sounds impeccably believable. It's only certain cues to do with the mouth expressions in the middle of the video that might give the clue away. And this is really the challenge with misinformation. But the saddest part of it is that many of these same platforms that would otherwise be able to list this or to have fact checkers check have, like Meta recently, said that they're going to do away completely with that and put it in the hands of everyday people now.
But should we then blame the government? Because look at this, something that looks so real is in the social media platforms. And one day someone will just come out and record or do something on the president saying this, something that he didn't say. Should we blame the government then on cracking on social media and AI generated content?
Well, I think that the government has to find means to exercise its role within whatever the constitutional framework is, right? So if we look to Kenya's neighbor, Uganda, they've gone about this quite differently over the last few years. They have had a social media tax, which meant that people had to pay the government a certain amount individually to access social networks and their messages and content there. They have done social media shutdowns. And across the continent, when you look at certain estimates from different policy groups, there sometimes can even be billions of dollars worth of value. That's essentially stopped when shutdowns occur. And even in Kenya, right? Kenya has had several shutdowns, and most recently, just a few short months ago, I believe in November, a shutdown of the messaging app Telegram as national exams took place. And that, of course, causing concern because it's done under some guise or some positioning of protection or freedom, in some cases, national security or other interests. And yeah, it does have potential infringing impact.
But now, when we talk about constitutions, Mark, sorry, before I come to you, Andrew, some of these constitutions didn't even foresee that there would be something like AI, and AI is not included in these constitutions. Then what happens?
I mean, that's the hardest thing to say, right? If we look to the European Union, they've been some of the most progressive when it comes to legislation and policy and frameworks around regulating what has now been called responsible AI. Even the United Kingdom on its own has sort of a framework around that. And the US, we take special note that as President Trump has now been inaugurated and assumed office, that he has what he calls an AI czar. So just somebody he's dedicating to say, look, I need to be at the cusp of forward thinking. And there's already been massive investments disclosed only within 48 hours of him being there. So I wouldn't say that it needs constitutional overhauls because we're not seeing a precedent for that anywhere in the world. But certainly from a policy framework, there's potential protections there. And I'll be honest, even the African Union has an AI strategy, and many African countries are seeking to follow suit, much like how we leapfrogged in the early 2000s, moving from sort of desktop computing, we moved straight towards the mobile phone, and that's ushered in mobile money and many other African innovations that have gone global.
Right. Now, coming to you, Andrew, as our reporter on ground, and you've been reporting on Kenya for years. Let's bring your perspective into this. You've covered countless youth stories. What are they saying about these regulations? Do they see it as protecting them or rather silencing them?
Well, from what I've gathered on the ground, many young people view these regulations with a mix of, I would say, skepticism and frustration, which is to be expected. They do feel that the government is overstepping and using the guise of protection to limit their freedom of expression. Well, some might see the intent to curb harmful content as valid. And because there is misuse also on social media, but the majority seem to believe it's more about control than safeguarding.
And not forgetting, obviously, Andrew, that social media has been a critical tool for organizing protests and expressing dissent. Then, from your own reports, do you think then the government is specifically targeting political expression with these moves?
Absolutely, absolutely. I will say that because I've spoken to some Kenyans on the streets doing previous stories, and I think this is one thing that the majority would agree with. Social media has played a pivotal role in mobilizing, you remember the protests, youth movements, and also exposing injustices. The other day, there have been abductions in Kenya. This is where people were organizing to ensure that we raise our voice on social media and the government will listen to us. So there's a sense that these regulations aim to stifle political dissent, just like you say. The timing is not right, you know. The timing is not right because Kenyans went to social media to shout about abductions. The next day, Josie, these people started being freed from all over, abducted in Nairobi, but they started being freed.
Right. I know that, Mark, you definitely have something to add on what Andrew has said, because, I mean, yeah, as much as we can say social media is also a monster, it's a powerful tool, right?
Yes, I think at Nendo, we've been tracking this. So in a number of bits of public research and also research for various private sector clients, looking at their own reputations, keeping their public standing. We've seen social media data as one of the most important data points to explore. So Josie, when we look at this, I'll give you a quick example. We're doing some calculations the other day, and you look at somewhere like TikTok, for instance, where, you know, we all see its meteoric rise. We've heard that there's, you know, north of, I believe, 150 million Americans there, and the ban and reinstatement. But when you come closer to this side, there's 12 million plus Kenyans on that platform estimated, and they're uploading an average, right? And this is on the lower side, 1.3 million TikTok videos a day in Kenya. Just one of the various potential examples there, just showing that, you know, these platforms have a significant volume of content being created and published on a range of issues. And when we now comb through it, is when we see that, yes, some of it is marketing, business, politics, culture, music, you know, makeup, fashion, beauty, dance, comedy, you name it, all these subgenres. But at the heart of it also is people expressing, where's the country going? Where's the economy? Interpreting different events for each other, and sometimes even seeking to hold the government account. And Kenyans on Twitter, now known as Kenyans on X, have global impact, where they've, there's been heads of state. And we've chronicled this in some articles and various publications that Nendo's done. Heads of state of different countries have had to answer, in a way, to what Kenyans on Twitter have
through
said.
Social media.
The country, that's right. At a position where it sees itself as a counter check, not just to the local government, but even the perception of Africa and Kenya as a whole.
Right. Yeah. I mean, speaking of that, social media, it's something that is being used so much to just address issues, like you mentioned, X. There's a time, obviously, during the protest, the Kenyan protest, even your president had to come and answer questions using the X platform, that's social media. But how do you then think this proposed regulation could affect the country's vibrant digital culture?
Yeah, I think that Kenyans are likely to some degree to seek to resist it. I think there's definitely concerns. I think there's been questions even with the incoming cabinet secretary for ICT, William Kavogo, who's come in recently and said, hey, you know, we need to, you know, I'm going to paraphrase here, we need to sort of get the act together, because this, meaning the internet in this case, can be switched off. You know, those are not particular sentiments that ring very well or popularly. The current regime of the day has also struggled really with what we might call controlling the narrative or controlling public perception on social networks. It's partly the reason that a number of prominent social media figures tend to be some of the ones abducted or who go missing and end up with serious questions regarding the authorities as well, to the point that even, you know, different development partners, bilateral partners, you know, are turned to so that they can put pressure on the Kenyan government to account for these people, where if people cannot present themselves on the streets for fear of their safety and their ability to constitutionally express themselves through peaceful protests, that then online, you know, seemingly for however long is possible. And even recently, we've seen an announcement of the Dutch monarchy with the king of the Netherlands set to come to Kenya. And the actual Dutch monarchy reporting that their entire IT systems were overwhelmed with people writing emails saying, you know, from sort of Kenya's digital citizenry saying, hey, we don't think you should come. And so that's part of these expressions of protest that frustrate the government on one end.
Yeah.
And frankly, actually make it look, you know, look bad on one end. But Kenyans are also asking material questions around governance, around use of public finance, austerity measures, and how the country and economy is doing.
Yeah, but then the government is also pushing, right, for AI adoption while simultaneously clamping down on social media. Then do you see this as contradictory, or is there a way Kenya can balance innovation and regulation?
That's a great point. I think Kenya, like you've said, has been a progressive country in that regard, where Kenya now has, you know, a gentleman by the name of Ambassador Philip Tigo, a special envoy for technology and AI, you know, traveling and really seeking to represent Kenya and unlock capital, resources, opportunities, contribute to global policy. So at that level, you're right. That's a very progressive step on behalf of the regime. On the other hand, like you say, there's the regulation of AI. I would argue it's not all of AI really here. It's a very particular type of use of AI. So generative AI, which is a subset. And then specifically, it tends to be some of the imagery that's been used. So what's been quite unpopular and unflattering has been the use of generative AI, which is able to generate images or text similar to ChatGPT, the popular platform by OpenAI, or the visual ones, and specifically the one on X known as Grok. That's the one that actually has been a real pain point, because ever since Elon Musk and his team integrated Grok, their AI platform, their generative AI platform, in together, you can generate images in there. And some of the ones that have been generated have been of political leaders in coffins or really, you know, dead or otherwise. And some of those, of course, can be grotesque and macabre. But, you know, the question there is now where this tension comes in, because you're no longer talking just about AI. You're talking about AI inside of a very popular social network. So when we're asked about the question of should these social networks create a local physical office, that question is actually a leading question. All of them have a physical office except for Twitter, X now, formerly known as Twitter. So sometimes it's the fact that there's very little seeming control.
Mm-hmm. But have you, just a question obviously for our listeners, because I know this is something that they would want to know. Can it be traced? Who did this? Where is it coming from? Sometimes you just see a picture now flying all over on X and you're wondering, okay, who really sat down and created this?
So some of the work we do at Nendo touches on this. We call it social media listening. It's where you really just can investigate and review data points to find who said something first. So, the first mention of reject finance bill, for instance, that or many mentions to do with words, images, videos, and so on. So the short answer I'd say yes and no. Yes, to the degree that it's many times possible to find the first, but what you have to understand is that many of these accounts are what we'd call pseudonymous, right? So people don't have to go, I have an account called, you know, Mark Kaigwa. I could also have another account, some people call these burner accounts. And there I can talk anything and everything and not reveal much about my identity, for example. And so typically that's now the gray area of where, even if you knew who said it first, there's a question of whether you can find the identity of that person and to what degree that's infringing on their personal rights of expression, while them also seeking to carry out that within some sort of parameter. Even, you know, we've been tracking misinformation and disinformation through a platform we call StopReflectVerify.com. And over time, one of the things that we've seen is how there's an evolution, even different videos now and very almost lifelike videos that are coming with key characters and, you know, soon, similar to the talked about, even voices. So we're waiting to see, but I'd say it's very difficult to stop it. And even if you trace it, that's not a guarantee of success that you'll find the actual person who shared it. The answer, I would say, will come down to what we can call digital forensics, right? So this ability to prove that a video really did come from a CCTV camera, was not manipulated. And there are some ways to tell this. That's one of the aspects of responsible AI that many platforms are seeking to do. So I'll give an example. If you're looking at some of these images we've discussed on this podcast and you find them online, if you look at the bottom left or right, sometimes you can see a watermark. So one of the reasons we know that these images are generated inside of X.com, owned by Elon Musk with its tool Grok, that's the name of its artificial intelligence platform, is that it leaves a little watermark. And one of the big challenges that have been pushed towards phone manufacturers like Samsung, where I can take a picture of Josie, a picture of Andrew, picture of Mark right now, and I can circle it with my phone. And I can give instructions and it can change our outfits. It can do all sorts of things. They are meant to leave little bits of data in the image that say that this image was manipulated in this way. So you and I can't see it as ordinary people, but somebody pursuing forensics might look and find some of those breadcrumbs. But like you're saying, we're in uncharted territory now. And certainly I feel African states, African democracies, African elections are particularly vulnerable.
Right, right. And if you're listening to this podcast, I know you're listening now and you have questions for Mark on exactly how you can check if something is fake or original. I mean, just write in the comment section, or you can also just reach out to Mark Kaigwa at Mark Kaigwa, I think on X, at M Kaigwa. I know you might have more questions than the ones I'm asking here, but I mean, this is something that actually affects each and every one of us. Now, to you, Andrew, what are the government officials saying? Do you think this reflects insecurity within the government, or is it a proactive move to align with global tech trends?
I would say it's a bit of both, honestly. On one hand, the government may genuinely want to align with global trends around digital governance. On the other hand, it reflects deep-seated insecurity. Historically, every administration has sought to control narratives, and the digital space is now where those narratives are shaped. Because the youth now are mostly on social media, with their growing criticism of the government, it is very, very clear that these measures are also about consolidating power and preempting dissent.
Now, Mark Nendo, your company has released reports often highlighting how social media shapes conversations in Kenya. Do you think the platforms that we've just been talking about, like TikTok and X, are being unfairly targeted for their role in protests and dissent?
Possibly not. I mean, I think even if we look to X nowadays, President William Ruto is not only quite active, but frequently, for me, at least as far as my team and I have been tracking, breaks a number of records over time as far as live streaming on X. It's a love-hate relationship. So on one hand, they want to be present. They want to be seen. When the wildfires took place in the United States, President William Ruto issued a statement offering support. I mean, in our research and a lot of our work, we would actually call TikTok more influential, not just because it's video,
really?
But also because it's where a number of people have swung. We call that the base of the pyramid. Yes, I would say
okay.
that. So even if you compare share numbers between X in Kenya and TikTok, right? So TikTok at 12 million, some of the early stats from last year put Twitter, you know, X now at just under 2 million, right? So you're talking about a 6-time size difference.
Yeah.
When we look into the state of social media in the country, Facebook is untouched and unrivaled at the top, 17 million plus. It's not going anywhere. People don't like to talk about it. There's a version of Facebook called Free Facebook, where Facebook has agreed to pick up the tab for mobile data for certain users, particularly on Android. And that keeps people going there because they don't have to pay with their megabytes. Somewhere like TikTok, for example, in Kenya, there's a package that allows you 1 gigabyte of TikTok-only data for 10 shillings. To put that in context, that is less than...
Whose idea was that? Whose idea was that?
It
has to happen in other parts of Africa.
It's happening, but it's happening. It's happening on MTN. It's happening on Safaricom. These are there to build what we call the behavioral science part, to remove the feeling that I can't watch this video. It's going to finish my megabytes.
Exactly.
In Kenya, each of the major, not even major, across the entire nation, all the vernacular. So we're talking here about the different ethnicities from Kisii, Kalenjin, Luhya, and wherever they are, right? Mijikenda at the coast, that they have their own sort of TikTok communities where they'll share news, updates, politics, culture, music, comedy in those ethnic languages. And TikTok has gotten incredibly good at finding a way to figure out, besides the national language, Swahili, besides English and American or global content, how you can get and learn people's basically desires and what languages they speak. And so on the basis of this, it's far more inclusive than Twitter, which skews English or sometimes Swahili, the national language, but doesn't do that well with ethnic languages, at least in Kenya. So these are the examples now that are meaning people are spending more time somewhere like on TikTok. They might use X and Twitter to keep up with news, breaking news, etc. But a number of people have shifted their media diet according to some of the data and studies we do at Nendo. And that for us means that it's underestimated and underrated. And sometimes it's actually more influential, particularly in the protests, in our estimation.
But now, as we wrap up our discussion, Mark, from your perspective, tracking digital trends, does this crackdown align with global and even regional patterns, or is Kenya charting its own path in the tech space?
I say Kenya is seemingly charting its own path. I would expect some resistance. I think that there are several civil society groups that would seek to, reject or overrule this, that would seek to, just bring aspects of the constitution and jurisprudence from our legal system around this. And Kenya does pride itself on being very tech forward, as you said, right? Kenya has seemingly created the brand or identity the last 12, 15 plus years of Silicon Savannah, this technology metropolis that is progressive, that wherever you are in the world, this is your gateway to the continent. It's the originator of mobile money. So Kenya has this delicate balancing act between becoming a repressive state that might shut down the internet, seek to withdraw or remove certain content that it deems unflattering on the government of the day, compared with attracting investment, creating jobs, and really opening up for a world with AI, which talks about job losses globally. Kenya is trying to position itself in some way to acquire some of the new jobs emerging.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark. And Andrew, as we wrap up, just for you to be our prophet, or maybe you can foresee the future, or maybe based on the trends, have you seen, you've seen in the country, how do you think Kenyans might react if these regulations are implemented?
Josie, if history is anything to go by, there will be significant pushback. Kenyans are vocal, they are resilient, and deeply protective of their rights. This you have seen before. So social media has been a lifeline for so many when it comes to business, when it comes to everyday entertainment and also learning new things. And attempts to restrict it will definitely lead to protests, both online and offline.
Right. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining us here on DW Africa Link podcast, Mark Kaigwa. You can follow him on X at M Kaigwa, also our correspondent in Kenya, DW's Andrew Wasike. Many thanks for joining us. Well, we leave it at that. Please remember to follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Kai Nebe. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. And until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.